various artists.
So you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Providence is a group exhibition honoured Ivan Anthony, the third of its exhibition series. Providence brings together a collection of artists, emerging, established, as well as European antiquities, pulling them together in space to create this rich cosmos of dialogue, a unique encounter between works that speak to this lineage of storytelling. I caught up with two of the artists showing work within Providence, Sophie Gregg and Erica Holm. Sophie Gregg produces mesmerizing paintings enriched with intricate webs of fairy tale-like fables.
Could you start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice a little bit?
Hi, I'm Sophie Gregg and I'm a painter. I'm a recent graduate from Elam and my paintings are very much inspired by medieval illuminations and Renaissance art. I am really drawn to the idea of paintings that are sort of little tableaus or scenes from stories or fairy tales or sort of personal narratives from my family, especially the women in my family. And so I guess I'm also really concerned with depicting these sort of female characters that live in this kind of symbolic world that's populated by all sorts of creatures and lots of demons that are always attacking them.
Gorgeous. And you currently have work showing in Providence the Third, a group exhibition at Ivan Anthony. These works inhabit a real sense of storytelling, this quality of myth and folklore, while also being informed with this rich history of medieval and Renaissance. What draws you to the works of the medieval and Renaissance?
I mean, mainly I think it's that I grew up surrounded by that kind of historical art canon. My mum is a amazing artist herself who has always been really drawn to the work of old masters like Ribera and Caravaggio and all of the Renaissance artists. And so that was huge for her art practice, which had a really big influence on me growing up. And she's also a collector of all this crazy old religious artwork. So
your house was pretty full with all these works?
Yeah, it was about 10 Jesuses in every room. So it's really second nature for me. Just where I draw all my inspiration from, I can't really help it.
Your own works have this real feeling of peering in on an alternate world and its beings, like watching a scene unfold within the confinements of the frame and at times being confronted by the subject staring back at you, breaking the fourth wall in a sense. Could you speak a bit more about this element of storytelling within your work? Where does this world of your paintings arise from?
Yeah, I've always been really drawn to fairy tales and folklore and oral histories. There's something about how these stories are so symbolic and so stripped back and often bizarre and grotesque that they have a way of talking around these big subjects that, you know, are the most important parts of our lives. I find it really interesting, the history of fairy tales, like if you take Red Riding Hood, for instance, that it became this like morality tale. But the earliest version of Red Riding Hood that we have has got a really complicated moral lesson to it. Red Riding Hood tricks the wolf by pretending she has to like go pee outside. It's like much more cutthroat and kind of ruthless than the version that we've grown up with. So there's this real getting to the heart of something. Like with Little Red Riding Hood, even though it's about this, you know, totally fantastical tale of a wolf, you know, kidnapping this girl, there's a way that it talks about how in danger little girls are in the world that feels so much more real than just discussing it up front. And so sort of folk tales and fairy tales and dreams are, you know, huge inspirations for me because they have this opaque, strange way of talking about things that feels so much more true than actually just discussing them in an intellectual way. They get to like the irrational, emotional truth. Yeah, I'm always trying to do that with my paintings. I want them to feel really true, even if I don't know quite exactly what I'm trying to directly say with them, but they should feel true.
And do they all like live in their own little universes, or do you feel like with each painting and with each project you're kind of layering and building onto this world of your works?
Yeah, I definitely think of all of these women as living in the same universe. There's this narrative written by this medieval female writer called Christine de Pizan, called The City of Ladies, or The Book of the City of Ladies, where she writes about building a city where all of these great women throughout history and mythology all live together. And I really like that idea of building a world for all of these women to live in, instead of collecting all these women together. And I feel like each woman has her own little story and her own little journey and little nugget of sort of psychodrama to figure out or represent.
Like her own little fable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And together they kind of represent what it is to be a woman and what it is to be a woman, specifically within my family history. It's sort of a way of figuring out what it means for us to all be here and all be related to each other and all inherit the traumas and the histories that we've all gone through together.
Mm. And the imagery used within your work, are they informed by specific medieval or Renaissance references or memory, or kind of like entirely imagined? You kind of briefly talked about it, but yeah, a bit more about that specific imagery.
Yeah, I mean, each painting comes together sort of like a Frankenstein's monster. Like, they're stitched together from all these different references.
Mm.
Like my painting Catamenia, which is in Provenance right now, that was originally inspired by this little detail in a medieval illumination of a woman with this demon sitting on her big billowing skirts, and it's kind of like pulling her down. And I just loved that image so much, and I knew that I wanted to steal it. And from there, it sort of became also about the reference to Veronica's veil, a lady holding up the veil with a skinned rabbit on it, which is a reference to a personal family story, have come down to me like fairy tales, with references from, you know, Western art canon and things like medieval illuminations and things like that, stitching them together until they're their own alive body, like Frankenstein's monster. In the end, they always turn into these very like universal archetypal images and tableaus.
Mm. And housing these fables, these images and these characters, these women, your paintings often sit within these quite intricate architectural frames that act as this continuation of the painting, extending the world of the works while also acting as architecture itself, housing these figures and their worlds. Could you talk a bit more about these frames and their relationship with the painted image?
Yeah, the framing devices really came out of my frustration with just the rectangle and looking a lot at medieval paintings and how they existed as art objects as opposed to just two-dimensional things that lived on the wall. These were objects that were on church altars and were real solid things that had, yeah, this kind of architectural quality to them. And so I really wanted to try and harness that for my own paintings. There's something kind of insufficient about just the square or the rectangle or the flat surface that I was getting really, yeah, frustrated with, because I felt like I wanted to make a real home for these characters, these women. I wanted to build something that they could live in rather than just represent them. I wanted to bring them into this world in a really material way that felt solid.
Mm, beautiful. And I'm going to switch it up a little, bringing it back into the materiality, into the process of your work. Your work showcases this really beautiful pairing of painting and drawing to create wonderful contrast within the works. Have you always explored this merging of your drawing and painting practice within your works?
I started really exploring the drawing aspect of my work kind of by accident. I was doing a year at uni where I was just studying for my BA in English and anthropology and working almost full time, and I just had no time to do any painting. And so I just let myself off the hook and decided no painting for a year. I'm just going to draw whenever I get the chance. Mm-hmm. And it was the best thing I ever did for my art practice, I think. It totally changed how I felt I should be painting. I think I used to kind of go on autopilot and just paint things in quite a traditional, realistic, figurative way. And so with the drawing, I learned that, you know, something could be finished without necessarily needing to follow all of those traditional techniques to a T.
Like a place to, like, kind of work things out, like, without that kind of pressure of that finished painting.
Exactly. It gives you so much more freedom when you don't owe it to the work to make it this complete finished thing in the way that you are kind of been programmed to think it must be finished. And a lot of my favorite artists, like Holbein, is an amazing drawer, and some of my favorite works of his are just these really simple portrait drawings. And I looked a lot as well at the etchings of Albrecht Dürer. And then when it came to merging painting and drawing together, there's actually this one painting by Van Eyck that's was left unfinished, a painting he did of St. Barbara, that I just got so fixated on and obsessed with. Because even though the end result is unintentional, like it was just left unfinished, there's this really magical quality to it of the blended drawing. It's got this really magical quality to it with the drawing on the underpainting left exposed and just this smoky background sky put in. And so for a lot of my last year at Elam, I was kind of trying to chase that quality that that one painting had, mm-hmm. Without it being this kind of like horrible gimmicky thing of like, oh, I'm leaving my painting half unfinished. Mm-hmm. I wanted it still to be this like very finished, very resolved outcome, but capturing that softness and sharpness that a drawing can achieve that is hard to do with just painting.
Mm, and this painting process, could you talk a bit more about that? Do you undertake quite a traditional painting technique?
I definitely draw really heavily from traditional painting techniques. I used to paint in quite a traditional Flemish style, where you do a grisaille layer or a dead painting, which is just done with white and like raw umber or something like that. And it's just a monochromatic rendering of the image. And then you glaze over that with various layers to get this really realistic kind of effect. And so in recent years, I've been trying to push these really traditional techniques into these more unconventional spaces. But these days, that's kind of the main bulk of the painting that I do, is just this kind of ghostly layer, just painting with white, or just doing a single monochromatic glaze over the top of a dead layer and letting the drawing and the color of the panel underneath come through as the shadow.
Mm. And within this exhibition, your works sit amongst the beautiful works of others, including the works of Andrew MacLeod, Liz Moore, Francis Youp Richard, to name a few, as well as collected European antiques. How does it feel having your painting sit amongst these works?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal and humbling. I mean, in a double sense of these artists that I've looked up to for so long, and like I'm so inspired by Liz and Andrew and Francis. And then also, yeah, very similarly humbling to be amongst all of these old antiquities, and especially because I feel like art from the pre-modern era has this quality to it that I really wish and I hope that one day I can capture in my own work, that I think comes from the fact that these were really functional objects. They were devotional images or images that served like a social purpose, like portraits. There's this kind of egolessness to the works where the artist is really not present in them. And yeah, I really hope that even though so much of my work is really personal and is about my family, the end goal is for it, each painting to be its own thing that stands up on its own, even if you didn't know anything about me and I was just some anonymous maker, that the painting would still have as much power.
That was Sophie Gregg speaking to me about her work within Providence. I also caught up with artist Erica Holm, who creates these beautiful sculptures enriched with ritual and human connection.
Would you like to start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice a little bit?
Kia ora, I'm Erica Holm. I'm an artist based in Tamaki, Auckland. I primarily work in sort of sculpture and installation-based sort of practice. A lot of wood, metal, kind of sort of hard materials and casted objects and things. I sort of work between kind of like a furniture making idea and then also the body as well. A lot of like kind of bodily materials and then images of the body too.
Wonderful. And you currently have a work showing in Providence, a group exhibition at Ivan Anthony. In this, you present your work Cheek to Cheek, a beautiful oak and pine carved bench with intricate carved braid detailing that seems to speak to this religious cosmos and the medieval. What draws you to the ideas and the aesthetics of these worlds?
It's really the sort of ritual elements of those worlds. It's the idea that you have these kind of like religious objects, things that are really heavily associated with a particular process that you might do in prayer in a church or things like that. And not really thinking about any sort of specific religion, but sort of just the whole concept of having these like devotional objects involved in ritual. And then I think a lot about those kinds of ritual objects you have in your everyday life. I've specifically been looking a lot at like romantic objects that you have with your partner, like, you know, your toothbrushes or something, or your two pillows, and thinking that we have these rituals that we do together in this house, and these are the objects that we use to do those rituals. In the same way that you sort of, you know, you have God on your side because of these objects, you sort of like, oh, we have these special toothbrushes in bed with us, so therefore our relationship is good, you know, we are pious, you know, because we have these beautiful little ritual objects.
Yeah, these objects that, yeah, are shared in a daily ritual. They're not just like a dormant object that sits there, but one that is craving the body to interact with it.
Yeah, all of these. I mean, that was the work Cheek to Cheek. It kind of, it's a bit yuck, but it came from kind of thinking about like double-ended sex toys and things like that, and how they're like a connection between two people, you know.
And these objects also all kind of have this connotation with this act of devotion and prayer. Could you speak a bit to the decision behind these items of furniture? You did speak a little bit about them, but just a little more about their relation with these histories that you kind of draw from.
Yeah, the furniture sort of thing, I kind of started getting into it just because it was my old job, but I feel like the way that I think about furniture now is I'm usually thinking about like antique furniture specifically as the kind of images that I'm drawing on, because it is from a time when, you know, the ornamentation of an object really meant a lot to the person who had it. Mm. You know, you didn't just have a table because you could sit at it, but it was, you know, the legs of it were carved with some sort of detail that meant a lot to your family for many generations, or was part of some crazy myth or something. So that it's kind of why I'm interested in the furniture thing, because it's something contained within your home that you use constantly with other people, but it has a lot of kind of storytelling within it, and the way that it looks kind of, you know, in a keepsake or something that's been passed down through generations, like an heirloom. Mm. I mean to say heirloom.
Mm, yeah, because a lot of furniture now, they kind of have this lack of human touch associated with them, like they come from these factories and stuff. They're not like these kind of laborious, time spent hands-on crafted objects. So yeah, you're looking more to that, yeah, that labor of love and that like human touch associated with it, linked to the storytelling lineage of these objects.
I think that this came to me I think when I was moving out of my childhood home with my parents, and I was looking around the room, and the objects that were in there and like the wooden walls and things had these like deep gouges in them from really specific acts that had happened to me. And or like I remember like a specific fight or something, or like a specific time that I like banged my finger on something, and there was, you know, the object had beckoned me to interact with it or whatever. But that is so much of like what I guess like contemporary or modern furniture sort of has, where it's like the forms themselves don't really mean anything, but what happens to them, usually through interactions with the body, is kind of the thing that becomes the storytelling, where they're like ornamented with all of these like scratches from like very specific arguments or something, where or like a ding in it from like a really frustrating time you moved it, you know?
Yeah, no, they hold, objects hold such meaning and such, every little mark that really sparks something that I hadn't thought about. And within your work, you kind of reattach this bodily autonomy to these pieces, this kind of body connection, sculpting here into these wooden architectural objects, attaching a real bodily nature into its core structure. What informed this decision to carve these real bodily elements into the work?
It sort of started just thinking about the, so Elaine Scarry, by her book, The Body in Pain, she talks a lot about like the body being able to be endlessly modified, and it kind of like hits the same sort of spots as like creation. Like the modification of the body is just like the creation of the body in a sense, where it like has the same sort of joy to it or joyousness to it. And I was thinking a lot about that, like, modification of the body. I know it's, like, such a classic sort of queer thing, body transformation sort of stuff, and hormones and everything. But, you know, that there is this ability for the body to transform, whether that's, like, you know, voluntary or through, like, pain or some kind of surgery. But I was thinking a lot about how furniture kind of has the same capability to it, where... you know, as I was saying before about like a room getting dinged up or a piece of furniture getting dinged up, it's like endlessly modifiable. And when you're making a piece of furniture or something out of wood, it has that same process of like sanding and carving and machining and all of these like intense modifications to it. And I ended up really liking this parallel between the body and its modifications and like a wooden object and its modifications. And so naturally I just started like bringing them together and ornamenting little bits of the body into stuff in that like very Freudian fetish object kind of way, where like you see a bit of hair, just a braid coming out of something. And then I think Freud has these horrible things about like the cutting off the braid is like castration, you know, but then it also being like how the braid is such a pure thing to have, and how when you separate that bit of the body out on its own, it becomes such a fetish object to people and like has so many intense associations, like putting a big stomach on something, or like putting a braid or putting a phallus on something, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like the braid also has, like, it's got this real element of, like, another person attached to it. Like, yes, you can braid your own hair, but there is something about that act and that ritual of braiding your own hair, braiding someone else's hair, that kind of really connects people.
Yeah.
Is that something you're thinking about?
Yeah. Braiding is just, like, it's the ultimate, like, feminine connection between someone else. It's like having your hair braided together. Braiding your own hair, braiding someone else's hair. It's like, yeah, I'm always thinking about ways that the body connects with another body. And the braid is like, it's just the best one, I think.
I agree. It's wonderful. Within this exhibition, your works sit amongst the beautiful works of others, including works of Andrew McLeod, Liz Moore, Francis, Ute Pritchard, to name a few, as well as collected European antiquities. How does it feel having your sculpture sit amongst these works?
It's really exciting seeing it in that room, actually. I really love that show. I love how it looks. And I do love it. I really love that idea of showing old antiquities with new works. I think it's super interesting. I do, when I saw them in that room together, I did make me think a lot about the I don't know, like that sort of uncanny idea about like you making work that looks really old, you know? Is it how it's quite interesting when you have something that is actually really old next to it?
Almost like your work's like an imposter of sorts amongst these antiquities.
Yeah. I always say like Trojan horse in my mind when I'm thinking about like using like a really familiar color palette or really familiar material or form or something to like get an idea across, but sort of more subtly.
Yeah.
I really like that idea rather than being super obvious about it.
That was Erica Holm, and before that, Sophie Gregg, speaking to me about their work within Providence, a group exhibition at Ivan Anthony on until the 27th of September.